The thing that's funny is that whenever you see a breakaway play in any sport,
yeah.
and you know, as a former professional soccer
yeah.
player, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like the guy gets alone, and it's one-on-one with the goal.
But then now there's a whole other thing
going. By the way, adorable.
You just want to pinch his cheek.
Yeah,
yeah, okay.
Yeah, no, they live at Black Smokers down at the bottom of the ocean.
So they're getting geothermal.
That's right.
Energy
right.
sources.
Yeah.
Here we go. These creatures lay eggs in the stomachs of other creatures, which hatch and kill their hosts. Are they from outer space or from underwater?
I saw that movie. It was called Alien.
Yes.
Yes, you're
it
right.
It is outer space.
It is outer space, and it is the movie Alien.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, let's move on to our next one. Is this from outer space or underwater? This creature can make objects in their vicinity float and their extremities light up. Come on now.
Underwater, bioluminescent creatures.
Go ahead.
You just have to be neutrally buoyant to float, so that wouldn't be too hard underwater. Mm-hmm. So I'd give it underwater.
See, this is how you trick scientists. You give them something that sounds like it should be underwater, and it's outer space. It's called E.T.
Ah.
Ah, see? Gotcha!
All right, so I had an issue with Avatar, because I get the scientific inspiration for the creepy crawly things and the animals and the plants.
Okay.
But those floating mountains, it was like,
no.
Come on. Now I don't know, is there anyone who hasn't seen Avatar? Because Because in there, there's a moon around an exoplanet.
Yes.
Exoplanet, planet orbiting another star. A moon around it is called Pandora.
Pandora.
And that moon has a rare element in it called
unobtainium.
Earthlings, we Earth people being Earth people, of course we want to invade that place and mine it for unobtainium. And what apparently these floating mountains have high concentrations of unobtainium. But I had to ask him about the scientific explanation for the floating mountains.
Oh.
So let's check it out.
Oh, this is going to be good.
Do you have a way to explain to me how they were floating?
Okay, so... don't ask a question you don't want the answer to.
No, I can hang, all right?
Unobtainium is a naturally occurring room temperature superconductor, type 2 superconductor. And, you know, with flux pinning, you know, the Meissner effect, you can actually suspend a room temperature superconductor in a strong enough magnetic field. So the planet has very powerful magnetic fields.
Oh.
So these or... The...
Okay, no, it's good. No, I'm with him. No, I give him a B+ so far on that. But go on.
You have to assume that a room temperature superconductor can exist.
Okay.
But we haven't found 95% of the mass in the universe, you guys. So don't talk to me about floating mountains until you find the rest of that mass.
So I guess here then was my question, because I was ready to accept that. All right, strong magnetic field,
mm-hmm.
you float things if yeah. it's highly magnetic. But if they are then primarily unobtainium,
yeah.
then why did the military have to get it from under the tree? They could just lasso a mountain.
Yeah, I struggle with that, but here's my explanation. The what we call the fluxcon, or the flux concentration, is so powerful that it messes with the electronics. And so their big mining machinery doesn't really operate very well. All the robotics that they need to extract it doesn't work very well there, so they go...
He got out of that one. He looked pretty good. He got... So, Charles,
yeah.
these mountains floating.
Yes.
How plausible was his explanation?
I would say...
Is that
say,
a scientific account?
Yeah, I was going to say, the look on your face told us how plausible it
look,
was.
But
he mentioned the Meissner effect.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remembered seeing it briefly in physics class.
Yeah, just superconductors, right? You've seen maybe on YouTube channel, or maybe you've seen a movie where you have a beaker of super cold, superconducting stuff, and then you have these little bubbles kind of floating in midair, it seems, right? That's because of the Meissner effect. You have superconducting things going on. But it's this little tiny scale, all right? His explanation of trying to create this whole mountain caused by that and flux density and blah, 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 no.
So you don't think we can get a moon with sufficient magnetic field strength to levitate mountains?
Well, if we did that, then all those helicopters would be flying off into space.
Ooh.
Right.
So...
That's right. It wouldn't. Right.
Right. Given that, it's really all right. As long as it's self-consistent, as long as there's something internal, we're okay with that. And I think his line of what he said, that we still don't know what 95% of the matter in the universe is actually very telling. Because all you have to do is to bridge that gap, take that little tweak up in that unknown, and you're okay.
Well, up next, we talk to James Cameron, Avatar director, about his solo submarine dive to the deepest place on Earth's surface, on Star Talk.
Hey, are you struggling to get to sleep? If so, the fine people at Mattress Firm want to help. Mattress Firm is here for you when you're looking for ways to improve your sleep. These are mattress experts here, people. Actually, they're not just mattress experts. They can help you build your bed from headboards to adjustable bases to sheets. They even have bedroom decor. They've got you covered literally and figuratively. Ha ha ha, I'm so clever. Plus, if you go to mattressfirm.com/podcast, you can save 10% with the code podcast10. Mattress Firm offers a 120-night sleep trial, so you can rest assured that you'll love the mattress or your money back. And they offer a 120-night low-price guarantee, so you know you paid the perfect price. With more than 3,000 stores nationwide, not only are they in your backyard, this means they have the ability to offer you deals that nobody else can. And that's on top of the 10% savings you'll already cash in on. So go to mattressfirm.com/podcast and start sleeping better tonight. Support for today's show comes from Starbucks Double Shot. Starbucks Double Shot starts with a bold Starbucks coffee and is blended with milk for a smooth, creamy, delicious, and I mean delicious flavor. It's enhanced with ginseng, guarana, and B vitamins. And Double Shot is available in 6 delicious flavors: mocha, vanilla, hazelnut, white chocolate, coffee, and Mexican mocha. Did I mention they are delicious? My goodness, I can't stop saying it because I have actually tried this, and I have to tell you, in the afternoon when you get a little sluggish, man, this gives you a great pick-me-up. And guess what? You know it. It's delicious. It's an energy drink that not only tastes great, but gives you the energy to go from point A to point done. Starbucks Double Shot. It's energy to do the things you actually do. Find it in your local convenience store.
This is Star Talk.
Welcome back to Star Talk from the American Museum of Natural History, right here in New York City. We're featuring my interview with film director and explorer James Cameron. And his film portrays worlds on epic scales. But he says the devil is in the details, not only in his movies, but in his passion for underwater exploration. Let's check it out.
People want detail. They want a world that they can immerse in.
We want to know you thought about it.
Yeah. I always think that if you have 10 times more detail than you actually want in the movie, what you do leave in the film feels like it's right. You may not know why, but it's there for a reason. It's like, here's a good example. The lunar lander, right? The LEM. You got 20 Hollywood films done before that where we're landing on the moon in pointy rockets with tail fins, and they all look the same. And then the lunar lander came along and it looked like a bug. You know, what the hell?
Yeah.
But that's because it was based on certain engineering principles, not Hollywood design ideas.
So it's not just your interest in the oceans or space. You've touched and been touched by engineering and technology.
Yeah.
And there was a lot about the cameras used for Avatar, but you go farther back than that.
Well, yeah, I just love engineering. I love solving hard engineering problems, and I love working with really smart engineers in a room and trying to do something that hasn't been done before, like, you know, make a sub and that can go to extreme depth. You know, there were materials problems, electronics, batteries, all sorts of things that had to be developed that were actually hard problems. And, you know, I just like that.
So, Charles, you like solving problems?
Yeah.
So he would have made a good scientist.
He would have made a good scientist. He would have made a good engineer. He would have been a good just about anything.
He could have been somebody. But that got me wondering, okay, what kind of preparation, what kind of thinking must have gone in to motivate him in 2012 to make the first solo descent to the deepest place on Earth in a submarine that he piloted and co-designed.
Wow.
So you know where he went? What's the deepest place on Earth?
The Marianas Trench.
Mariana Trench.
Thank God, I thought you were going to say my fears.
Almost 7 miles down.
Almost seven miles down off the coast of the Philippines. And so I asked him about that record-setting dive. Let's check it out. So what motivated you to go to the bottom of the ocean, bottom of Earth?
You know, the funny thing is that I've been asked that a lot, and it occurs to me that a kid would never ask that question because a kid would know you just got to go. Why wouldn't the, a kid...
He just so dissed me in that moment right there.
No, it's just that we, as a culture, we start to think like
I want to be a kid again.
I know, yes. Exactly. So a kid would say, why wouldn't you go?
Yeah, of course.
It's there, and you haven't looked yet, so why wouldn't you build a sub and get in it and go and look?
But you went by yourself.
That was kind of a constraint. I mean, I would have built a two-man sub or two-person sub but... We had to evolve beyond the Trieste that went down there in 1960, which had to be towed out there, and it had a big mast or a tunnel that you went down to get into the sphere. So it was very much like a military sub. But we wanted to use the paradigm of modern research submersibles, where you go out on a ship and you put it in the water. So it had to be a certain weight, and it all scales up around the size of the sphere. So we thought, all right, we're going to do this down and dirty. We're doing it privately. It's not big institutional money. It's not a Navy project. So let's start with the smallest sphere that we can cram a human into. And so then that instantly, pretty much on day one, was a one-person deal.
That's
for about
that's
12 hours.
Spookily like how you had to get into the Mercury capsule.
Yeah,
because exactly. Mercury capsule was not some lounge chair.
No, it was.
You know,
it was tiny.
Yeah.
But I figured guys in F-16s fly 11, 12-hour sorties with refueling in the Middle East. They do it all the time, and so it's really not.
Humans have subjected
humans do
themselves.
This. They do this.
And so, all right. So just to be clear, why the shape of the vessel has to be a sphere?
Okay. Well,
tell us.
Yeah, this is a leading question because you know the answer. Yeah. The sphere is the most elegant shape in nature because it's just like a bubble in water. Nature naturally tends to get these isotropic pressures forming a sphere. So it's like your bubble is just made out of steel. Any other shape will tend to fail. You'll have what's called stress risers, where the stress fields will peak at a certain point, like a corner if you're building a box or whatever. So sphere is the elegant shape that resists pressure, and so you start with a sphere. Then whatever other shape the vehicle appears to have is usually about the flow dynamics over the vehicle.
Right.
You put the flotation up high and the heavy sphere at the bottom, and that's how you start.
Otherwise, you're going down head first.
Yeah, you don't, or tumbling, which would be even worse.
Yeah. Yeah, then you get, like, seasick. You don't want that, right?
No, you don't want that. Trust me.
Oh, yeah, I trust you.
Been there, checked that box. It's not fun. But as a filmmaker, as a storyteller, I'm thinking, if you want people to be interested in Hadal research, you have to go there. Hadal is anything below 6,000 meters, which is abyssal depth, right, all the way down to the deepest spots, which are close to 11,000 meters.
So the takeaway from that is below that, you die even faster in a failure.
You die pretty fast at 6,000 meters, actually, but I think it's a very fine degree. You know, I always figured it wouldn't hurt because by the time the pain impulses got to my brain, it wouldn't be there anymore.
Your brain wouldn't be there, right, yeah. Right. You'd just be crushed
to
a pile of goo.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Pretty much, yeah.
So, Charles, is my calculation accurate? He'd be a pile of goo.
You would be a pile of goo. Every 32 feet that you go down in the ocean, every 32 feet you go further down, you're increasing again the same amount of pressure that we're experiencing now on the surface of the Earth.
So 32 feet is one atmosphere.
That's right.
Okay.
So we're going down 35,000 feet. That's the equivalent of more than 14,000 pounds per square inch on your body. Imagine if this entire Hadal sphere were smushing you.
So that's 7 tons per square inch.
Eight tons per square inch down
so,
the bottom.
Yeah, so that's a quick pile of goo.
Oh, yeah. The problem is you won't
that's not the problem.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. No. There's some other problem neglected here.
The problem is the cleanup.
If you went from you to goo immediately, you wouldn't feel it. He's right, right?
By the way, that's the name of the next Dr. Seuss book. From you to goo.
What will probably happen is your ship will start to creak, it'll break, water will start coming in. You will suffer before you become goo.
Because it's not an instantaneous thing.
That's right.
It's a slow death.
That's kind of the problem.
Well, that's pretty cool, though. I mean, since you're a scientist, and this is a fascinating conversation about what, are there any other, like, really great ways to die in science?
There is no end of great ways to die in the universe.
Really?
Yeah. Charles and I could just trade back and forth. Charles, you go first.
Okay, pick go one. Ahead.
I would love to be destroyed by a gamma ray burst.
Ooh.
Okay, ooh. You say ooh, like, I don't know what that would be like. What is it?
It's a very high energy flow of particles and light.
Well, I'm,
that would vaporize them quickly.
Okay, but what would it actually do to me? Like, to my, would it just break me down into like?
So it's high enough energy to completely break apart all molecular bonds in your body.
Okay, now that is cool.
Yeah, yeah. It will just completely disassemble you, atom by atom, molecule by molecule, then atom by atom.
Then atom by atom.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That doesn't even sound right.
I got one.
Go ahead.
Okay. Asteroid strikes.
Oh, yeah.
Asteroid yeah, yeah.
strikes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So you want to be right where it hits so you die instantly. And you get to watch it come in. That would be cool. If you're not right where it hits, you will die, but later, slowly. Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right, how about this? Because I read this from you. Spaghettification.
Ooh, love me some spaghettification.
Death by black hole.
Death by black hole.
Yes. Death by black hole.
Death. By black hole. Death by black hole.
I give him a B+. That's it on that one. Yeah, you fall into a black hole, you... If, that's my way to die. If I had to pick one of... Forget the gamma ray burst. It'd be cool to become atoms again, but still. Falling into a black hole, you get to a point where it starts pulling on your feet faster than it's pulling on your head.
Okay.
And you end up stretching. Now, you'll stretch, you know, we all like a stretch,
right? Oh, this feels good.
Until it stretches you so much that tidal forces, this is what they are, these stretching forces, exceed the intermolecular bonds of your flesh. And then you snap into two pieces, likely at the base of your spine.
Okay.
Then those other two pieces continue to fall, and they feel these same tidal forces. And then they snap. Each into two pieces.
The ultimate chiropractor.
So you go from 1 to 2 to 4 to 8 to 16. You bifurcate your way down into the abyss. You are extruded through the fabric of space.
Sweet.
Like toothpaste through a tube.
Nice.
And so we have a word for that. Spaghettification.
Nice.
There it is. Coming up on Star Talk, I asked James Cameron about exploring oceans on other planets when we return.
Has your company outgrown QuickBooks? Are shared spreadsheets, manual processes, and legacy systems costing you time and money? Introducing NetSuite by Oracle, the business management software that handles every aspect of your business in an easy-to-use cloud platform. With NetSuite, you can save time, money, and unneeded headaches by managing sales, HR, finance, and accounting instantly, right from your desk or even your phone. Thousands of the best-known and fastest-growing companies use NetSuite to manage their business, and now it's available to you. Better yet, it's more affordable than you think, because right now, NetSuite is offering you valuable insights to help you overcome the obstacles that are holding you back free. Don't miss out on unleashing your business's full potential with its free guide, Crushing the 5 Barriers to Growth. You'll learn how to acquire new customers, increase profits, and finally get real visibility into your cash flow. Get NetSuite's guide, Crushing the 5 Barriers to Growth, at netsuite.com/startalk. That's netsuite.com, netsuite.com/startalk to download their free Crushing the 5 Barriers to Growth guide today. netsuite.com/startalk.
Bringing space and science down to Earth. You're listening to Star Talk.
Welcome back to Star Talk from the American Museum of Natural History. We're featuring my interview with movie director, inventor, explorer, James Cameron. And his hit film, Avatar, is set on a fictional alien moon. of an actual planet orbiting a neighboring star. And moons like this might be the best place for alien life. And so we discussed my favorite moon for the search for alien life, Jupiter's moon, Europa. Let's check it out. Europa has an icy crust and very likely ocean of liquid water, which we expect has been liquid for billions of years, kept warm by a pulse of gravitational energy sent to it from Jupiter and surrounding other moons.
Tidal pumping.
Yeah, tidal pumping. So it's outside of the traditional Goldilocks zone. And which is fun because in our search for life in the universe, it broadens the net.
Hugely.
So now,
any ice world could be, if it's got gravitational pumping, could have thermal energy, could have a liquid ocean, could have life.
So this is orgasmic for you because it's space and an ocean.
Almost literally.
You get to fly in space and go to the bottom of an ocean.
I know. And look
for life that's alien.
Well, it could be cooler. If they discovered, you know, an immortality drug tomorrow, I would be very happy because I would live long enough to get to go to Europa.
For no other reason?
A couple other.
So I joke about Europa because if we do find life forms there, there's only one thing we would be forced to call it. They'd have to be called Europeans. I'm pretty sure. I'm just saying.
I hadn't thought of that. But Enceladus is good too.
Enceladus,
you've got active venting right now, and they think that there's actually an exposed interface where you could theoretically fly down a crevice or a crevasse and get to the bottom and see boiling water, not boiling because it's hot, but boiling because it's in a vacuum, so it changes
the boiling temperature.
And so it's just vaporizing, and you're looking at seawater that is then in communication due to, you know, convective currents with some kind of hydrothermal activity. What I'm intrigued by is they flew Cassini through a plume and they picked up some...
By the way, by the time this airs, Cassini will be dead.
Let it rest in peace.
It's on a death spiral right now
into Saturn.
I don't know if Cassini was Christian, as you just put across, but... Whatever religion it was,
did he get burned at the stake, maybe? He probably did.
It's on a death spiral into Saturn now to get it out of, so that it doesn't accidentally crash into one of these moons.
Where it could contaminate it and screw up our chances of being able to tell life from life. So they found silicon nanoparticles, which they believe can only form in the plumes of hydrothermal vents. So literally you've got water that's being brought down, heated up by these tidal effects, squirting up into the ocean, boiling around for a while, getting to the surface, and then evaporating, going out into space, getting picked up by a human spacecraft and analyzed. That's pretty...
Without even having to land.
That's pretty freaking cool.
Yeah.
Now, fly around long enough, they might hit a fish.
No, I got something cooler. Ready? So in that same vein, we know that the frozen ice of Europa has cracked and refrozen because you see patterns that are shifted, like a puzzle shift.
Yeah, like that went to there.
Well, yeah, exactly, yeah, right. exactly. And so if that's the case, that means there are crevasses that come and then refreeze.
Yeah.
And so if there are fish that get caught in the upwell of this water, the fish is now frozen near the surface.
Exactly.
So you can have astronauts landing there and not having to drill the kilometer-thick ice sheets. They can just dig into these frozen carafe sections and then have like a freeze-dried fish, right on the spot.
Or bacteria or whatever it is, but that's the...
I want fish.
That's the low... All right, fish, like a sturgeon.
Yes!
That European caviar is expensive.
So, Charles, what would you visit first, based on your knowledge of the solar system?
Europa, for sure. I got to tell you, a few years back, I had the great privilege of flying over the North Pole in the daytime. And the ice pack there, the part that wasn't melted, looks so much like the crust of the surface of Europa. I just swear, I feel it in my bones. There's something alive down underneath there.
Ooh.
Wow.
So, Jim Cameron is a really curious guy. Well, that's obvious.
Yeah.
And so I asked him if he had any questions for me as an astrophysicist. So I solicited this from him. Let's check it out.
All right. I'm going to do this just to mess with you.
Okay.
You no, hang but I want to hear your answer to a question that that I think everybody asks, and I've never heard a succinct answer that makes any common sense.
Oh.
If you're not a higher mathematician.
Oh, okay.
The observable universe is 13.5 billion...
Yep, 13.8 last...
13.8 billion...
Light years.
Light years, yeah. Sorry.
Light years. 13.8 billion years old.
Yeah, years old, and therefore we can...
The horizon that we have access to...
The microwave background
is
or whatever.
When that light was sent to us...
Yeah, right.
It was 13.8 billion years ago.
Right.
And, yes, the...
All right, so it's a bubble around us with a radius of 13...
Yes.
Billion light years, right?
Yes.
What's outside the bubble?
We know.
Mathematically.
No. I got this.
Okay. All right. Good.
Okay. Imagine the universe is infinite, just for the moment. It turns out that assumption is not terribly important, but just imagine it's really, really big. And here we are in some spot. And I see you. I see you not as you are now, but as you once were 5 billionths of a second ago.
When the light left me.
When the light left you.
Yeah.
And you look marvelous over that time, having changed. As you look farther out, you will see light that began from the object farther back in time.
Yeah.
From the moon, 1.3 seconds. From the sun, 500 seconds.
Yeah.
If you pluck the sun from the middle of the solar system now, we would not know about it. We would continue to orbit. We would continue to feel the rays.
For like 8 minutes.
For about 8 minutes and 20 seconds.
Yeah.
And then we would fly off at a tangent and plunge into an icy depth, never to be noticed again.
Yeah.
Okay. So we continue this to the nearest star to the sun. That's 4 years.
Yeah.
Across the galaxy, 100,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
The nearest large galaxy, 2 million years.
Mm-hmm.
You keep doing this. Since we know the universe had a beginning that we call the Big Bang,
mm-hmm.
there will be a point where there will be an object who sent us its light right when the Big Bang was happening.
Yeah, right after, yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
So that creates a horizon in space.
Mm-hmm.
I look this way. I can't see farther away than 13.8 billion years because that's the beginning of the universe. Every direction I look. So my horizon... like the horizon of a ship at sea,
mm-hmm.
that's a two-dimensional horizon. That's just a circle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The same distance in every direction.
Right.
When in space, your horizon is a three-dimensional circle, which mm-hmm. we call a sphere.
Mm-hmm.
So now, suppose there's an object 15 billion light years from us. The universe isn't old enough for its light to have reached us yet.
Yeah.
So there's still universe beyond this horizon in the way that there is ocean beyond your horizon when you are sailing at sea. And the day you want to worry is the day the evidence of the Big Bang begins to just disappear. And no longer is this horizon expanding at one light year per year. No longer does that wash over any more matter that's out there. That would be a physical edge of the universe.
Mm-hmm. And what's beyond that?
I thought I satisfied him. No.
You're just defining the terms. I'm talking about what's outside that.
So the real question is what's outside of the universe? And I'm delighted to be able to answer for you. We have no idea.
Yeah.
Top people working on it. So we ever going to get there, Charles?
Sure. We already know what's beyond the cosmic horizon for us. It's more universe.
But I just said that.
Yeah.
Right.
But
you have no idea what's over there. Well, it's basically the cosmological principle which says that everywhere is basically the same. So,
I get that, but that you'd have to assume it's infinite.
Not necessarily. Right. If I go 10 billion light years in this direction mm-hmm. and 10 billion light years in that direction, both those points are within my cosmic horizon, but each point is not within the other's cosmic horizon.
Yes.
And as a result, since we look in every direction and the universe appears on large scales to be homogeneous and isotropic, that means
we have
that
to send out expeditions.
That's what we have to do.
And then bring back the info.
Precisely.
Coming up, more on the intersection of exploration and imagination with director James Cameron when Star Talk returns.
This is Star Talk.
Back to Star Talk. Featuring my interview with one of the world's most successful and innovative filmmakers, James Cameron. And his passion is underwater exploration. But I wonder if he had aspirations to actually explore the frontier above us as well. Let's check it out. Do we need to send storytellers into space? Or do we just need you to tell stories here that you've invented out of your head?
Yeah. Well, those are two totally different kinds of stories. One being, I always think of Avatar as a fantasy. It's an allegory for the way where it's set in space, but it's really meant to be about our planet and our relationship to nature and so on. But do we send a storyteller to go along on a Mars mission, let's say.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, I mean, in the NASA world, you know, you don't, because you need that person to be something else. But what
payload matters.
In my worldview, you have to select your astronauts not only for their ability to perform the mission, but for their ability to come back and tell us what it felt like. I think that's critical. I think they. I'm not saying you send. You don't like.
But that's a storyteller.
That's a storyteller, exactly. I mean, they're an astronaut first, but they're a storyteller second, because they have to tell us what it felt like. And Buzz Aldrin was great at it, and Neil Armstrong, who I revere as a god for, you know, but he was a terrible storyteller. In fact, he wouldn't even talk to the press.
Yeah, he was just basically a private citizen.
Yeah, he didn't feel that was part of the job, and I feel it is. And look, I mean, Neil's a national hero, and I don't want to get thrown under the bus for dissing Neil, but he didn't do that part of the job. And I think that it's critical that when we send if we're going to send humans, which is kind of a dumb thing to do, robots are going to do it better, cheaper, go farther, be more resistant to radiation, all that sort of thing, but they can't tell you what it feels like. And they can't tell you what they were thinking. They can't tell you what the spiritual journey was. And, you know, when the first time some small group of people is standing on the surface of Mars, they better goddamn well come back and tell us what it felt like.
So, Charles, you got any parting thoughts here?
Albert Einstein once wrote that the origin of all great art and science is the same thing. It's the sense of wonder and mystery. Whether or not James Cameron is a practicing scientist, he's drawing from that origin, and he's helping us all see that.
So, first, I agree. And maybe were we to do this all again, we wouldn't say, who are we going to send into space? Let's send military pilots that all sound the same. Maybe we would send a cross-section of people who create civilization. And every civilization we reflect upon, what is it that rises up above everything else? It's the architecture, it's the science, it's the art, it's the writing, it's all the things that we value, the expressions of creativity in the human species. So to say we have all of that creativity here on Earth's surface, but we're only sending this one dimension of kind of people into space, I think that underserves our capacity to be curious and our capacity to explore. So perhaps in a next generation of exploration of space, you don't say, oh, you have to be useful and then be a storyteller in addition. Maybe the fact that you're a storyteller is the most useful thing about you on that mission. And the fact that you are an artist is the most useful thing about you on that mission. Because now you can take the full depth and range of human emotion and apply it to places yet to be experienced by human emotion. And these are the people who are uniquely placed to carry us, not only intellectually, but emotionally, into a future we so desperately seek. You've been watching Star Talk.
And I've been your host, Neil deGrasse Tyson. Chuck Nice. Charles Liu. I've been your host, Neil deGrasse Tyson. As always, I bid you to keep looking up.
Like Galileo dropped the orange.
Thanks again to Starbucks Double Shot. Starbucks Double Shot starts with bold Starbucks coffee and is blended with milk for a smooth, creamy, delicious flavor. It's enhanced with ginseng, guarana, and B vitamins. And when you need a little pick-me-up in the afternoon, it is the perfect tasty way to get it. Starbucks Double Shot. It's energy to do things you actually do. And it comes in six delicious flavors. Find it in your local convenience store.
Taking. I'm pro, but they're trying to face me like mirror, opposite side, adjacent. I'm stable inside, they're strange, but somehow the masses describe us the same. Just opposite sides of the positive vibes. You just lost your life to a signed arrangement. Watch for the signs in life's equations. Unless you go for the violation, it's best you don't. If you get too close, it will end in total annihilation. That's when things break right down to the bare bones. If you're anti-neutral or anti-pro, then it's up to anti-life Brownsville shows. And then it's up to Andy, then down they'll go. If the strongest fools you to get involved, it could be 1-on-1 for 3 rounds or so. I'm even surprised they show up. They wanna say opposites attract. I say they collide and blow up. I say they collide and blow up. I say they collide and blow up. They wanna say opposites attract. I say they collide and blow up. It won't matter why they show up, they'll never be more than we can be. Plus I never outlaw us after the blast. So why they're still moving anti? I see some of them moving anti, but they're against what we're trying to be. They claim they have positive reach, but from origin probably not as it seems. Though the masses say they're like me, I'm from part of a larger opposing team. Like, if you're on our side, so not on our side, that's loss of your life to a signed arrangement. Watch when you try those violations, we've got a light in hibernation. Get too close, I expect you won't, we're ending total annihilation. With only the energy left to escape, if you ever see a momentum change, you'll be glowing brighter than effigy flames. You get charged electron in a way that's bound for the bow for the reload like neutrino when he left on stage. You get charged like electrons changing states. So I'm even surprised they show up. They wanna say opposites attract. I say they collide and blow up. I say they collide and blow up. I say they collide and blow up. They wanna say opposites attract. I say they collide and blow up. It won't matter why they show up, they'll never be more than we can be. Plus I never outlaw ourselves after the blast. So why they still moving anti? Me and my posse are so strong, it won't matter who you elect. I am due the respect, abundantly brilliant, one in a billion, usually less. And since only a few representing truth, you have not got a clue where we went, but it's as clear as crystal structures and silicon, what they do to detect us. A beauty wrapped up in a spin like using roulette, but that's only the half of it. Cause regarding the evidence, whatever they charge me with, I oppose what the answer is. But I'm far from a pro, I'm in my own class of things. If you see through the glass and miss, I'm the reason the path exists. Mr. Anderson's clouded chamber, the one route that they doubt it made by the proof that the matrix found on paper. Big Bang was a sound that made us. Something from the outset changed us. You think slowing down might shape us? Room in the coldest group, so cold that we're way past frozen dew. No, my chosen few are opposing you. We're far ways better than yours. Would you get in a wars? Would you set in a war? They're just so much better than yours. When a measure of war, when they get rid of wars. That's beauty that never keeps full, but will still be all that it can be. Cause no matter how many last after the loss, that's why we're still moving anti. That's why we're still moving anti. That's why we're still moving anti. And I'm even surprised they show up. They wanna say opposites attract. I say they collide and blow up. I say they collide and blow up. I say they collide and blow up. They wanna say opposites attract. I say they collide and blow up. That's people that never keeps war, but will still be all that it can be. But they never outlaw us after the blast. So why they still moving anti?
You are listening to CKMS 102.7 FM Radio Waterloo, broadcasting from Waterloo, Ontario.
Want to advertise your brand, business, or product to university students? Advertise with Imprint, the University of Waterloo's official student newspaper. Imprint distributes to more than 85 locations within Waterloo, Kitchener, Cambridge, and Stratford, with a readership of 30,000 plus that includes students, faculty, and staff. Your printed newspaper ad will be enhanced by Imprint's social media technology platforms, which will integrate your advertisement with multiple online channels, including Facebook, Twitter, Bing, Yahoo, and their website, uwimprint.ca. To learn more about publishing prices, dates, discounts, and latest offers, contact Imprint at 519-888-4048 or email at ads@uwimprint.ca.
Welcome. You're about to experience a journey where there are no borders and the only limit is your imagination. Trip-hop. Techno. Deep house. And everything in between. You'll be arriving at your destination in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. You're listening to the Amplified Radio Network with Sean Savage.
We've just landed. This is the Amplified Radio Network. I'm Sean Savage. In this edition of the show, I'll have some great music from Jay Tripwire, Daniel Dub, DJ Sneak, and much more. Let's kick things off. This is Alexander Oral with La Noche. Here we go.
Amplified Radio. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Amplified Radio Network.
about time.
This is the Amplified Radio Network.
I'm Sean Savage. You're listening to the Amplified Radio Network. Don't forget to log on to amplifiedradio.ca. There you can find a host of goodies for you to peruse, including artist interviews and previous shows. This is Daniel Dubb with Down Under.
Amplified Radio.
We'll be right back.
Amplified Radio.
This is the Amplified Radio Network. I'm Sean Savage. If you missed any of the show or just want to hear it again, you can subscribe to the podcast feed on all podcast directories. Just log on to amplifiedradio.ca. We'll be airing exclusive content only on our website and podcast feed. There are monthly artist interview spotlights, DJ mixes, past shows, and past playlists for past shows. A big thank you to all the regular listeners. Unfortunately, that's all the time I have for this episode. This is the dub mix of One for the Muchachos from DJ Sneak. Until next time.
You've been listening to the Amplified Radio Network.
Hey, this is the Steady Rebels from Mississauga, Ontario, and you're plugged into Radio Waterloo 102.7 CKMS.
I turned 15 last week, and I'm feeling better than ever. A few months ago, I was having a really hard time and ended up telling my English teacher that I'm bisexual. I'm so glad my teacher told me about the LGBT youthline. I went to youthline.ca and ended up chatting with a peer support volunteer there. And now I feel a little less alone, knowing that there are people out there just like me who I can talk to.
LGBT Youthline is a support line by and for queer, trans, and two-spirit youth 29 and under across Ontario. Our service is open from 4 to 9:30 p.m. Sunday to Friday. Youth can call, text, chat, or email with us. Not a youth but want to support us? You can tell the young people in your life about Youthline.